Hey, Creepers, before we dive into today's episode, patron supporters have been listening to this episode since Friday, 3 days earlier, ad-free, amongst many other bonuses. It's only $2.99 a month, less than your fancy coffee. Want in? Head over to patreon.com/creepyshitpodcast and get access today along with so much more. All right, here we go. I have been hanging on to this gem for so long. I have wanted to do this episode. I found this story. I've been researching it for a while. And I'm so stoked that the time has finally come to share this with you. Because if you have not heard of this location, you are going to be totally mind blown today. And you are going to need your passport because we're taking a trip to Lithuania. And no, I don't mean like we're going to be going to some like total BS ghost tour through like the Vilnius. We're talking about a place that's so fundamentally unsettling, so psychologically intense that it will literally mess with your head without a single ghost story attached to it. Booze, I am talking about the Hill of Crosses, or Kryžių Kalnas, if you want to butcher some Lithuanian pronunciation like I just did. And let me paint the picture for you right off the bat, because you need to imagine a hill. Not a big hill, maybe 30 feet high at best. Now imagine it's absolutely covered, and I mean covered, with over 100,000 crosses. Big ones, tiny ones, wooden ones, metal ones, some as big as your head, ornate ones that probably cost more than your car, crude ones carved by desperate hands in the middle of the night. So totally picture that for a second. 100,000 crosses. And it's not a cemetery. It's not a church. It's something else entirely. So what the hell is this place? Well, buckle in, make sure your seat is in the full upright position, and grab your favorite bevy, because this story has everything. Medieval mystery, Soviet bulldozers, secret midnight missions, papal visits, and enough psychological weight to crush your effing soul. And the best part, every bit of this is real. Let's go. Let's start with what we don't know, okay? Because honestly, that's half the creepy factor, like right there. Nobody, and I mean nobody, knows exactly when or why people started putting crosses on this particular hill near the city of Sieluai. The earliest records have suggested it started sometime in the 14th century, but even that is a guess. So think about that. 700 years of people dragging crosses up a hill, and we don't even know why it started. Was it a burial site, a battle memorial, some kind of like religious vision? Nobody fucking knows. It's like the hill that just called to people, and they've been answering that call for centuries. The first solid historical reference we have is from 1850, when a Russian government official reported an unauthorized religious site requiring attention. By then, the tradition was already well established. The hill had hundreds of crosses, maybe thousands, all placed there by locals with no official permission and no central organization. But here's where things get really interesting. And by interesting, I mean deeply disturbing. The crosses weren't just religious devotion, they became an act of defiance. See, Lithuania has spent most of its existence being conquered by somebody, okay? Like, whether it's the Russians, the Germans, Soviets, I mean, pick your oppressor, honestly. And every time someone tried to crush Lithuanian culture, more crosses appeared on that hill. And it became this weird form of like passive resistance that nobody could stop. The real horror show started in the Soviet era. So picture this, it's 1961. Khrushchev, if I'm saying that right, is running the USSR. And he's decided that religion is the enemy of the state. Soviet officials look at this hill covered in thousands of crosses and think, well, you know, this shit's gotta go. So they bring in bulldozers. 3 days of work. Trucks hauling away centuries of devotion like it's garbage. Ugh, rude. When they finished in April of 1961, it was just bare dirt and tire tracks. The local party officials probably filed their reports thinking the problem was solved. No. Because within 2 months, new crosses started appearing. The KGB went fucking ballistic. How do you secure a hill? They increased patrols. They questioned locals, threatened anyone found with like woodworking tools. It didn't matter. More crosses kept showing up. Different styles, different materials, like they were coming from workshops across the entire region. So then, of course, being the ultimate dicks that they are, they bulldozed that too back in 1963. This time, they were even more thorough, cleared not just the crosses, but scraped away the top layer of soil. Now, posted guards for, they like had guards up there then for like months. The crosses came back anyway. I'm loving this, by the way. So the third and final bulldozing happened in 1973. By this point, it was like just pure spite, right? Like they're just like, nope, fuck it, we're doing it. And they're just, like I said, they're just being a bag of dicks. So they brought in heavy machinery, dug up the hill itself, and carted away like tons of the earth. Then they tried to flood the area, thinking maybe if they made it permanently wet, people would give up. You're wrong. Now, I'm not saying it was supernatural, and I am saying it was something deeper and more unsettling than ghosts. It was an entire population that had collectively decided this hill meant something worth risking everything for. And when you've got that kind of focused human will concentrated on one location for centuries, well, after all of the stories that we have shared, you'd know that that kind of energy eventually creates its own kind of energy. Now, let me tell you what it's actually like to visit this place, because you approach it from like a normal parking area, because yes, it is a tourist destination now. And at first you might think, you know, what are you getting into? A hill with some crosses. How intense could it be? But then you get closer. The sound is going to hit you first. Thousands, like I said, thousands of metal crosses are moving in the wind, creating this constant, like low-level symphony of creaking and chiming. It's not quite musical and not quite random. Visitors describe it as hypnotic and deeply unsettling at the same time. Then you see the actual scale, okay? These aren't just crosses planted in neat rows like a military cemetery would be. These are everywhere, stacked on top of each other, wedged between rocks, hanging from larger crosses, buried so deep in layers that you can't see what they're attached to anymore. Some are so weathered, they're barely recognizable as crosses. Just twisted shapes that might have been religious symbols decades ago. People consistently describe feeling overwhelmed before they even reach the top. Not spiritually uplifted, overwhelmed. Like the cumulative weight of every prayer, every desperate hope, every act of defiance that created this place is pressing down on them physically. Ooh, oh, yeah, no, that's creepy. So the crosses themselves definitely have their own stories and tell stories because names are carved into wood, dates spanning back centuries, messages in Lithuanian, Polish, Russian, and languages visitors can't identify, wedding rings tied to crossbeams, photographs so weathered you can barely make out faces, flowers that could be from yesterday or even last year. One thing that gets people is the layering, because you'll find tiny wooden crosses from 1943, like right in the middle of World War II, nestled next to an elaborate metal sculpture from like last week. 7 centuries of human desperation and hope all mixed together in this chaotic timeline of faith. But let's talk about the experiences people have there, because this is where the things get like so genuinely weird. Visitors consistently report emotional reactions that seem way out of proportion to what should be happening. So rational adults suddenly crying uncontrollably, strong people feeling like they can't breathe, a sense of being watched by invisible eyes. Now, you could totally write this off as power of suggestion, but when dozens of independent visitors describe identical experiences without having any sort of like reference point about this, that is when I start paying attention 100%. So people report hearing things too, like beyond the obvious like creaking of metal crosses, visitors describe what sounds like whispered prayers in languages they don't recognize, singing that seems to come from the crosses themselves. And multiple people sometimes report hearing the same thing simultaneously. So we're not talking about individual hallucinations. The visual stuff is harder to dismiss because consistent reports of movement in peripheral visions have definitely happened. And like someone is walking between the crosses, but then when like people turn, nothing or no one's there. And there's shadows that don't match the sun's position. And this weird optical effect where the crosses seem to multiply as you're looking at them, which, oh, that is so gnarly. Like, that is really gnarly. Now, look, I'm not saying that the Hill of Crosses is haunted by, like, traditional ghosts, but I am saying that when you concentrate that much human emotion, desperation, faith, any sort of potential historical trauma in one location over 7 centuries, something's going to happen to the place itself. Like, it just will. So let's talk about the night visitors, because even today, some people maintain the old tradition of nighttime pilgrimage. And those experiences, they're in a whole different category, my creepers, because this is just so, it's gnarly. Complete silence. where there should be wind sounds. The feeling of being surrounded by a crowd when you're absolutely alone. And temperature drops that come out of nowhere. And this overwhelming sense of being evaluated by something ancient as well as patient. Ooh, that's creepy. That almost gives me like predatory vibes in a sense, but I don't know. The more we're going to go into this, I really don't think it's necessarily predatory. But I found one documented account of a man who went up at midnight to leave a cross for his deceased father. He described the moment he stepped on, like, onto the hill. Every sound just stopped. No wind, no creaking, no nothing. Like, the entire place was holding its breath. He placed his cross, he said his prayer, and as he turned to leave, he heard what sounded like thousands of people whispering in unison. Oh my gosh. Now, was that supernatural, psychological, the effect of an incredibly emotionally charged environment? I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm not here to tell you what to believe, but I'm definitely going to say, yeah, probably. But that man believed what he experienced, and I believe him too. And he's not the only one that has stories like this. So when Lithuania regained independence in 1990, the crosses started appearing faster than ever. The government, now supportive instead of hostile, which, woohoo, watched as international pilgrims began arriving to add their own crosses to the collection. The big game changer that happened came in 1993 when Pope John Paul II visited. This is a guy who'd seen every major religious site in the world, but witnesses described him being visibly moved by the Hill of Crosses in a way that surprised even his entourage. He called it a place of hope, peace, suffering, and prayer, which sounds nice until you really think about it. Hope and suffering in the same sentence? That's not your typical blessed religious site description, in my opinion. So the Pope left his own cross there. He blessed the site and he declared it a place, of international pilgrimage. From a Catholic perspective, that's a pretty big deal. Like, I remember my Catholicism well. And yes, that is a very big deal. And it officially recognized that something spiritually significant was happening on that hill. But papal recognition didn't domesticate the place. If anything, it amplified whatever was already there. More pilgrims meant more crosses, more concentrated spiritual energy, more of whatever makes that hill psychologically active. Now, today, conservative estimates put the number of crosses at over 100,000. But honestly, I don't think anybody's counting anymore. I think we all just kind of lost count on this. They're so densely packed, and it's way too layered. It's way too intertwined. The hill has become this organic sculpture of human faith that continues to grow and evolve. Now, every new cross adds to the psychological weight of the place. Like, every prayer, every desperate hope, every act of defiance from the past 7 centuries is still there and still accumulating. And here's what's really, like, just twists the brain beyond belief, is the Hill of Crosses refuses to behave like a normal tourist attraction, whatever that may mean. But you can't just, you can't just walk up, take your photos, and leave unchanged. Something about the concentrated spiritual energy of the place demands a response. So this is really interesting because atheists report feeling inexplicably moved to pray. What? Like, religious people sometimes feel overwhelmed by doubt. It's like the hill strips away your usual defenses and forces you to confront whatever you're carrying inside. Now, I'm a true believer when it comes to places holding on to energy. I think when you pour enough human emotion into a location over enough time, that place becomes something more than just geography. Okay, the Hill of Crosses is proof of that concept, in my opinion. This isn't about seeing apparitions or hearing phantom voices. This is about a place that has absorbed so much concentrated human, like, will that it becomes psychologically active and it affects people and it totally changes them. So think about the logistics of what happened during the Soviet era, right? KGB surveillance, curfews, the constant threat of informants. But people kept coming anyway. Mothers carrying crosses for sons who'd been sent to, like, the gulags. Farmers leaving crosses for failed harvests and entire families making the pilgrimage despite knowing they might not make it home. Like, that is courage. What kind of force pulls people to risk everything to just leave a piece of wood on a hill? The Soviets couldn't figure that out either. Like, honestly, they had informants throughout the region, surveillance equipment, regular patrols, but the crosses just kept appearing. And sometimes, like, dozens in a night. They'd set up checkpoints, monitor the roads, and still wake up to find new crosses covering the hill. After the third bulldozing in 1973, something changed in the Soviet approach. They realized that destroying the crosses only made them multiply faster. So they tried a different strategy. They just ignored it, pretended it didn't exist, removed it from the maps, banned media coverage, and hoped it would just fade away. Well, that didn't work. By the time Lithuania regained independence in 1990, the hill was more densely packed than ever. There's something deeply unsettling about that level of persistent human will. The idea that you can bulldoze a place three times, threaten the population, deploy the secret police, and still watch it grow back stronger than before. That is incessant, and I love it. So it suggests that some human needs are so fundamental that they'll find a way to express themselves no matter what. And when that expression gets concentrated in one physical location for centuries, well, that location becomes something really special. So modern visitors often describe the approach to the hill as a gradual transition from normal reality into something else entirely. You're walking along a normal path, maybe chatting with your friend or whoever you're with, and then you see it spread out, like, below you. That's usually when the conversations stop. People describe a sudden shift in atmosphere. The air feels different, sounds become muffled or amplified in strange ways. Some report a sudden urge to whisper, even though they're outdoors and totally in an open space, which, oh, I can totally, that kind of gave me goosies because I'm envisioning this right now. And then there's the visual overwhelm. Your brain tries to process 100,000 individual objects and just can't. I mean, honestly, it's too much information. Some visitors describe a kind of sensory, like, vertigo, like the crosses are moving when they're not. And digital cameras have been known to behave very strangely here. Batteries drain faster than normal. Photos sometimes come out over or underexposed for no apparent reason. And people occasionally capture images that don't match what they remember seeing. So you could explain all of this away. Electromagnetic interference from all the metal, psychological effects of visual overload, the power of suggestion in an emotionally charged environment. But when dozens of independent visitors report identical experiences, well, that's when scientific explanations start to feel inadequate. Here's what really gets me, though, about the Hill of Crosses. It's not trying to be scary. It's not a haunted house or a spooky cemetery. It's supposed to be a place of hope and faith. But hope and faith concentrated to that degree with that much historical weight behind it becomes something very overwhelming. It's like staring directly into the collective unconscious of an entire culture. All their fears, all their hopes, traumas, dreams made physical and piled onto one hill. That's not comforting, okay? That's existentially terrifying. And the thing is, it's still growing. Every day, people are adding new crosses. Tourists, of course, yes, sure, but also genuine pilgrims who've traveled thousands of miles to leave their mark. The hill continues to evolve, and it continues to accumulate this spiritual weight, which means whatever energy has built up there over seven centuries, it's not static. It's building. And the crosses come in every conceivable form you could ever imagine. There's elaborate metal sculptures that took months to create, crude wooden crosses carved with pocket knives, children's drawings laminated and tied to existing crosses, wedding crosses left by newlyweds, memorial crosses for the dead. Some are just absolute beautiful works of art. Others are clearly made by desperate hands from whatever materials were available. But they're like, all of these crosses are all weathering together, aging as one massive collective monument to human faith and suffering. It all coexists on this hill. And the layering effect is what really gets to people. You can't see where one cross ends and another begins. They're stacked, intertwined, supporting each other in ways that shouldn't be structurally possible. It's like the hill has developed its own ecosystem of faith. And what makes the Hill of Crosses genuinely unsettling isn't supernatural phenomenon. It's the terrifying power of concentrated human will made visible. It's proof of what happens when centuries of faith, trauma, and resistance get poured into one physical location. And some places are haunted by the dead. The Hill of Crosses is haunted by the living, like, plot twist, by every person who's ever climbed that hill carrying more hope or pain than they could bear, looking for somewhere to put it all down. And that collective burden, it's still there and still growing, still waiting for the next person who needs somewhere to leave their cross. So here's my take. The Hill of Crosses proves that you don't need ghost stories to create a genuinely haunting place. Sometimes the real world, the accumulated weight of human experience is far more unsettling than any supernatural tale. When you've got 100,000 physical manifestations of human desperation and hope concentrated in one location, and you've got 7 centuries of spiritual energy poured into 30 feet of Lithuanian hillside, when there's also, like, you've got a place that literally resurrected itself after being destroyed 3 times, you know, that's not a tourist attraction. That's a location where the normal rules don't quite apply anymore. And the Hill of Crosses is still there. Like, it's still growing, still accumulating all the spiritual weight from being humanity's designated repository for prayers too desperate for normal churches. And if you ever find yourself in northern Lithuania, driving past, and I'm going to try and say it correctly, Sia Ulai, you'll see the signs pointing towards the Hill of Crosses. And you can absolutely visit. You can add your own cross if you want. But I'm seriously, even though, like, I would love to see this. I would really love to see it. Just be prepared, though, for what you're walking into. Because I imagine, I know myself very, very, very well. And I'm very empathetic. And I'm very sensitive to energies. And I know for a fact that if I ever saw it, I would probably bawl my eyes out. But because once you've seen 100,000 crosses covering a hill, and you felt that weight all concentrated in one place, once you've experienced what happens when faith and trauma get physically manifested, well, let's just say it this way. You're not going to forget that, like, ever. So, all right, you guys, that's it for today's episode of Creepy Shit and the Hill of Crosses, proving that sometimes reality is more unsettling than any ghost story you could ever imagine. So I am really curious on what you think of this, what your thoughts are. If you want to reach out to me over on Instagram, please, please do. I would love to hear from you. You can reach me over at creepy_shit_podcast. You can also hit me up on TikTok at TikTok at Creepy Host Star. I almost literally forgot. And of course, too, if you have been listening to this, just FYI, if you want early access to next week's episode on Friday instead of Monday, plus bonus episodes quarterly and all sorts of fun extras, then definitely treat yourself for less than a coffee and sign up on Patreon for $2.99 a month at patreon.com/creepyshitpodcast. There's a link right in today's show notes that you can click. And until next time, remember, sometimes the creepiest shit is also the truest. Okay, bye!